What's up? What's going on, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of the Periodic Table. It has been a long 2 month hiatus for this show, but we are finally back, and I am so excited to talk about science with all of you here today. I'm, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You might know me over as a host formerly at AfterBuzz TV, the Popcorn Talk Network, or over at the Movie Trivia Schmodown. But what you might not know is that I'm also a mechanical engineer, and I am a lover of all things science and science communication. And this is, if I didn't say so already, because the 2 months thing kind of threw me off a bit, but this is a supposed to be weekly science news show where we talk about science, the hottest science news stories of the week. And normally I have an amazing panel of guest hosts along with me from all different walks of life, from all over the different places of the internet. But today I thought, you know, my first show back in about 2 months, let's try going solo for this one. Let's maybe get a little bit of interaction in the live chat, I hope. And let's just have a great show for you all today. And I hope that you will join me, because I do think we have a good show. We're going to talk about ghost games, spotlight the psychological effect fans have on referees, the FDA granting full approval to the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine. And of course, we do have a special segment for you all. This week, we have Scientist Spotlight. We are bringing back Scientist Spotlight. It's a segment on the show where I love to highlight a specific scientist of note that I think has done some great work out in the world and deserves a little bit of a spotlight. But before we get into all that, let's jump right back up into our top story here for the week. And that is, of course, ghost games spotlight the psychological effects fans have on referees. And of course, if you saw the thumbnail, you saw my little Ted Lasso picture that I threw in there. That's a show that's been quite the talk of the internet as of late. I know I've been really enjoying both seasons so far. And I wonder what Ted Lasso would have to say about this story in particular. But as it turns out, guys, when the fans are away, the home team loses its sway, according to new research. And so we're going to talk about here during the 2019-2020 season, European soccer teams played in front of vacant stadium seats due to COVID-19. The home teams won less, lost more, and tied about the same. And comparing that with the season before the pandemic, researchers report that, in fact, the calls do not go to the home team during these crowdless ghost games, as they call them. So if you guys excuse me here for just 1 second, just going to try to sort some notes in order. But let's see, who do we have here in the live chat today? I see we have Haskell420 in here. As always, thank you so much for supporting the show. I'm going to try to pronounce your last name here, Ken Ulozes. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm super excited to see a new face or a new name in the live chat. Of course, we have Sabrina Ramirez and Michael Chu in the live chat. Welcome, guys. Welcome. If you guys have any comments or questions on the topics that we're going to talk about here today, throw them in the chat right now. And if you're here and you haven't said hello, let us all know that you're here. All righty. 1 second, guys. Excuse me. I know this is bad radio. All righty. And we are back. So let's get back to the story, guys, because there are some interesting stats here talking about compared to the outcomes of 645 games for the 2018-2019 season, with the outcomes of 641 ghost games for the 2019-2020 season, we are seeing these types of results that I'm going to get into a little bit further. But I think it's important to note countries included in this analysis were Spain, England, Germany, Italy, Russia, Turkey, Austria, and the Czech Republic. So, guys, with the stands mostly or entirely empty, home teams' win rate actually decreased by 8.3 percentage points from 48.1% to 39.8%, according to the research. Meanwhile, loss rates increased by 8.4 percentage points, which went from 27.6% to 36%. And also with fans absent, foul calls against home teams increased by around a incredible 26%, while calls against away teams increased by only about 3%. So that is a really interesting statistic to me. It kind of takes into play what we know as home field advantage, right? I don't know how many of you are huge sports fans out there. I'm a huge baseball fan. Unfortunately, a huge New York Mets fan right now. But home field advantage apparently is a thing, guys. According to this study, it's not just something that we hope, like, all right, we're at our home stadium today. Like, we're going to play well. We're going to have that home field advantage. Turns out there is a psychological impact, not necessarily on the players, which I'm sure does happen, but on the referees or the umpires as well. And I think one thing that I noticed in this article is that they compare it to the previous season before the pandemic. I wonder if there's more to this study. I would love to see data from, I mean, professional sports has been around for a long time. I'd love to see 50 years worth of data going back to see like how, because I'm sure there's like these ebbs and flows in these statistics from season to season. They do vary. So I don't know if they're only comparing the season before to the season in which the teams played in empty stadiums. I think maybe that's not enough data to definitively say that there is in fact a home field advantage and referees are swayed by the home crowds. I don't know if that's enough data, guys. Let me know your thoughts in the comments section. I see we have Ryan Fernandez in the chat saying Liverpool hit the hardest. Yeah, Ryan, I know you're a big soccer fan or football fan. So let me know if you have any more thoughts on that, Ryan. I'd love to hear them from you. We also have Ken here saying, I wish that baseball would use robot umps to call balls and strikes. For sure, I totally get that reasoning as a baseball fan myself. There is that argument out there that, you know, it's part of the game for umpires to make bad calls. But I think that is very like old school traditionalist trying to keep that old way of baseball thinking, which a lot of the times maybe isn't the best. And the pronunciation of Ken's name, Ulozas. Hopefully I'm getting that right. yeah, thanks for being here, Ken. Appreciate having you. So those are my thoughts. I think we should have some more data sets. I would love to see how the data fluctuates over the years. Maybe it stays relatively the same, but we do kind of see these ebbs and flows. And then I wish we had more than one season of data of empty stadiums. But I will say this is enough to kind of turn your head and make you go, wait a minute, maybe there is a home field advantage. Maybe referees are a little more hesitant to make a call against the home team because they don't want a negative reaction. I could totally see that as something very believable, something very plausible. But definitely really interesting thought exercise, psychological impacts of sports. As a huge baseball fan myself, I do find that particularly interesting. And I would love to know what Ted Lasso would have to say about that for sure. Guys, let me know in the chat. Are you watching Ted Lasso at home? And I see we have Ryan here chiming in saying, in terms of soccer, I think there is a lot of fans getting mentally in the heads of both home players and opposing players. So maybe not completely a difference in refereeing. So Ryan, you're saying that maybe you're not totally sold on this data. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you think maybe it has more of an effect on the players than it does the referees, which I think is interesting. I know you're a big European soccer fan. And he's saying, I think baseball would be a better sport to conduct this study on. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, you could probably go back to that last season where they were playing in empty stadiums and kind of retroactively collect the data because baseball logs every single play. So if someone wanted to go through and do that tedious work, excuse me. Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how it affects different sports, for sure. Both Ken and Haskell420 saying they have not seen Ted Lasso. Yeah, guys, go check it out. Yeah, it's a very, very wholesome show. Very wholesome show, for sure. Not necessarily science-based, but I figured, would I use the picture of Ted Lasso in my thumbnail just to get the views? Absolutely, I would. Absolutely, I would. I feel like they think it's what Ted would do. It's like what Ted would do. Probably not. Ted's a very wholesome person. But I don't know. I just honestly, I love the show. I saw an opportunity to use a thumbnail. I'm going to take it. Yes, it is on Apple TV Plus. And I know. I didn't know that you were a former soccer player. That's interesting. I want to know, do you have any takes on, similar to Ryan here about whether or not you think the psychological impact on the players versus the referees is any different, or one might weigh more than the other? I'd like to know, because obviously if we go back to the article here, it says that, and so looking at something that is just solely on the referee, right? We do see that foul calls against home teams increased by 26%, which I think is quite a bit. Let me know if you have a different opinion. I don't know the sport super well, but I think 26% is a pretty substantial increase from one year to the next. And that I feel like is something that, I mean, you could say maybe the players are fouling more with the empty crowds for some psychological reason, but I feel like this is something that is more so on the referees, seeing this 26% increase in foul calls, and the away teams increased a little bit also, but only by 3%, which I don't think is that significant. So right there, just looking at that alone, you're like, okay, there definitely is an impact on how the referees call the game. But I think we can account this other statistic to the players as well, which says the home team win rate decreased by 8.3 percentage points. And the loss rate increased by 8.4. So I think that maybe is something that you could attribute to the players' sense of having a home field advantage, where I don't know if every game feels like an away game. I just think it looks like it's kind of leveling out, because 8.3 and 8.4% are pretty spot on to one another. Maybe it just kind of leveled out the quote-unquote playing field a bit, like literatively and figuratively. I don't know. I think it's definitely true that both have, that there's a psychological effect, I think, on both the players and the referees, but I think we do see a more significant data change on the foul calls, which I think goes in line with the referees. So it's interesting. And I know soccer fans are very passionate. They can be very loud, maybe even a little hostile at times. So I don't know, if I was a referee, if I was to put myself in those shoes, I would probably feel more comfortable calling a foul on a home player in an empty stadium, because I know I'm not going to get booed or yelled at or heckled. I don't have to worry about potentially my own safety. I don't know. But we have Ryan once again chiming into the chat saying English Premier League got more strict with their refereeing system last season, so that might have influenced those foul numbers a little bit, but the other major European leagues did not. Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, like I said, these statistics were taken from teams all over Europe, but that could be true, that these numbers also could have changed a bit from the changes to the way they call games in the English Premier League. And we also have Christina V in the chat, welcome, saying the only refs I pay attention to are the ones that make the Eagles games one-sided. There are definitely some sus refs, for sure. Thanks for joining us here today, Christina. I know you are a Philadelphia sports fan, so we don't necessarily see eye to eye, but I appreciate you joining us here today, and I appreciate your input. So, interesting study, guys. I think the main takeaway here, obviously, I think because some of the questions I raised, I'm taking some of this data with a bit of a grain of salt, but I think there is enough there to say that, you know what? I think there is a psychological effect for home field advantage on both the players and the referees. So guys, if you have the pleasure to safely, I hope, cheer on your home teams at whatever sporting event, that, you know, make some noise. Why not? It could make all the difference. You know, I actually just remembered I wanted to tell this story about how I was actually at the 2017 World Baseball Classic when they were at Marlins Park in Miami, Florida, in the first round of pool play. And I saw Team USA, Team Canada, Dominican Republic, and Colombia. And there was a game, I believe it was USA versus Colombia. And I was sitting a few rows back behind home plate, and Nolan Arenado, I believe he swung and missed on a third strike, but it was dropped by the catcher, and I yelled at him to run to first. And I like to think that he heard me. And well, Team USA went on to win the World Baseball Classic that year. So what I'm trying to say, guys, is that I am a national hero. And I might have had an impact on Nolan Arenado's play that day. So I think there is some merit to this study. No, that is a true story, by the way. I am exaggerating my impact, I think, just a shade. But hey, I'm going to glorify it in my own head, because why not? Makes me feel good. All right, it looks like we have Ken is also from Pennsylvania, but not a Philly sports team fan. Interesting. Are you a Pittsburgh guy? Here you go. Yeah, Steelers and Yankees for me. Oh, not the Pirates, huh? Interesting. Yeah, and we have Haskell 420 in here sharing about growing up and playing soccer. Not a massive not a massive pro team fan, I think is what you're saying. But yeah. Oh, awesome. Thank you for sharing your stories in the chat here. Appreciate it. He's saying Yankees babies, of course. And oh, Kylie Petrano is in the chat. Welcome, Kylie, saying this is actually interesting. Yeah, I think so. I thought it was a fun story to kind of kick things off here today. You know, I think it's just a fun science news story, which is what I try to normally do on this show. The next story we're going to get into in a little bit here, I think, is a little more on the serious side, but I think it's always fun to have some fun, lighthearted science news discussions. We're learning about critiquing data, making sure you get enough data sets, and making sure the statistics are kind of in line there and you have significant amounts of changes and all that. It's important. It's important for sure. Let's see. Just making sure I'm not missing anybody in the chat. Ryan asking, did future Met Marcus Stroman pitch in any of the games you saw? I'm trying to remember if he did or not. I feel like he did, but I have a hard time remembering, because he did win World Baseball Classic MVP that year. But that's beside the point, guys. Enough about the World Baseball Classic in 2017, which was great, by the way. But I think it's time to move on and get back into the science. But before I do that, I just want to thank everybody watching at home. You know, we have about 6 people in the chat right now, a small group of you, but you guys have been super interactive, super helpful in making this show interesting. I feel a little awkward not having done this for a couple months. I'm excited to be back, and you guys are making my life a lot easier by joining me in the conversation. So I really appreciate that. All of you watching, please hit that like button. Or that thumbs up button, whatever you want to call it, you know, that, you know, really helps me out. And of course, if you're enjoying this type of scientific discussion and want to see me do this on a weekly basis with some really fun and exciting guests, and maybe sometimes solo like this, if you think this is going well, make sure you hit that subscribe button and the little notification bell so you do not miss a thing. And I'm also still very much in the middle of trying to upload these podcasts, these shows into podcast audio only versions. Right now, I'm on a number of different podcast platforms. We've got Spotify and Google Podcast. The best way is just go check out, I am on Anchor. So go check out anchor.fm. You can find the Periodic Table podcast there, and all the different various podcast platforms that I am currently on, trying to get out to the masses. If you are an audio only person, I promise you I'm working diligently to upload the nearly 30 episodes I've done of this show so far. So just bear with me a little bit longer, but I think it's going to be worth it, and hopefully grow some new audience here, which at the end of the day, this is trying to create, like I like to say, one big virtual science classroom where none of us are experts, but we're all here to learn and grow together. And for you audio-only listeners, I am wearing a lab coat that I got off of Amazon.com to make me look smarter, but by no means does it make me any more knowledgeable than you lovely people watching at home. So thanks for joining me. And do I have all the plugs out of the way? I think I do. Almost, you know, I'm also going to plug. A few weeks ago, I did drop a video trying to work on some more short form content. I posted a video on this channel about Boyle's Law and how atmospheric pressure and the volume change in a balloon, the crazy things that happen to a balloon when you go from super high elevation down to a low elevation. And the different types of math that you could play around with. And that I know sounds super nerdy, but please, guys, go check it out. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you all enjoy it. So let's move on to our next story here today. And like I said, it's a little bit more on the serious side of things. We're going to talk about FDA granting full approval to the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. And this story is coming to you from Live Science. And as always, guys, links to all the articles that I talk about on this show are always in the description down below if you want to read more for yourself and fall down one of those virtual science rabbit holes. So guys, as I think we've all heard by now, the FDA has granted full approval to the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, and it marks the first full approval for a COVID-19 vaccine in the United States and might pave the way for more vaccine mandates and ease concerns for those who are unvaccinated. So more than 170 million people in the United States have already been vaccinated with COVID-19 vaccines under what's known as an emergency use authorization. So we've like heard about this, I think, a lot on social media and in the news, and I'm sure a lot of misinformation spreading about you know, this as well, but it was a fast-tracked approval for medical products to be used under emergency scenarios such as a global pandemic, which we are still very much in. But guys, to be granted these emergency approvals, the vaccines had to meet a high bar. Make no mistake about it. Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and Pfizer had to submit thorough data and prove that they were highly safe and effective at protecting against COVID-19 before they were granted emergency approval. And trial participants were followed for 2 months after vaccination to ensure that there were no side effects. And obviously, guys, you know, there are those three different vaccines out there that I talked about. Obviously, there's been some things in the news about something like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but there is definitely some confidence, some level of effectiveness in all three of these vaccines. And I think you definitely out there watching, in my personal opinion, if you got any of them, you went out and you did the right thing. And, you know, I'm not going to shy away from that. You know, on this show, I like to try to be as objective as possible, but I think it comes a point where something as important, I think, as the COVID-19 vaccine, I encourage people, if you are healthy enough, if you are able, definitely get the vaccine if you can, especially now that Pfizer is fully FDA approved. Like this article mentions, there are going to be more vaccine mandates. You're going to see your workplaces, I think, start to enforce you getting the vaccine to keep your job. I think we're going to see a lot of situations like that, maybe even proof of vaccination to attend your favorite sporting event or you know, go out to a highly crowded public place. I can definitely see that becoming a reality. And I don't think it's something to be nervous about. I don't think it's something to be afraid of. But I would love to hear your thoughts in the live chat right now or in the comment section down below if you're watching after the fact. I'd love to hear your thoughts and your own personal experiences on all this. Because like I said, guys, this is a conversation. This is one big virtual science classroom, and it's about all of us learning more and, you know, growing as people and scientific minds, but also, you know, helping to admit that, you know, I don't have all the answers off the top of my head. Sometimes I just flat out don't have the answers on the top of my head or otherwise, but it's important to know that there is a lot of misinformation out there, and there's a lot of, I think, great resources to go to make sure that you get the most accurate information that you could possibly get, especially when it comes to something as serious as the COVID-19 vaccine. But there is a little bit more in this article that I want to get to, for sure. But I do want to jump back into the live chat because I see some of you sounding off over here. Kylie said, I got the booster COVID shot on Saturday. That's great. Yeah, for me personally, I got Pfizer. I think a little more at ease knowing that once I hit that certain time period, I think they said 8 months after your second shot that you can get the booster. It puts my mind at ease personally that I'm going to be able to get that booster shot when it is available to me. I see Haskell 420 also saying likewise. And for sure, also we have Ken saying, my roommate and I both unfortunately had COVID this year. I'm sorry to hear that, Ken. I hope you both recovered and your symptoms weren't too serious. I know how the virus can affect people very differently. I've had plenty of friends and loved ones that I've heard about getting the virus, and loved ones of friends getting the virus, and people go from being asymptomatic to having very serious symptoms. And it's unfortunately the reality of COVID-19 is that it is a little bit unpredictable. But I do feel very strongly in saying the best thing that you can do to protect yourself and potentially those around you is to get vaccinated if you're healthy, you don't have some sort of immunocompromise that doesn't allow you to get it, or an allergy that doesn't allow you to get it. Totally understandable. That's something to discuss with your doctor, for sure. But if you were able, I think it is highly encourageable. I think it's the only way that we're going to be able to beat this pandemic if everyone who can get vaccinated does get vaccinated, because the fact of the matter is, the truth is that it does protect you. It won't stop you from getting COVID. I've had multiple people in my life now get COVID despite getting vaccinated, but it should hopefully, as long as you're not immunocompromised, it should keep you out of the hospital. It should keep your symptoms to a minimum, and it could potentially save your life. And I think that is a really important conversation that I think we need to have with our friends, with our loved ones, publicly here, respectfully, of course, but I think it is important. But I do want to get into this article a little bit more, because they do talk about what the companies have to do to meet full approval. What did Pfizer have to do to meet this full FDA approval? And they had to submit what's called a biologics license application that includes at least 6 months of post-vaccination follow-up on clinical trial participants, more details of the manufacturing process, vaccine manufacturing site inspections, and quality test of samples of the vaccines. So that seems pretty strict, guys. I feel something like that gives me a lot of confidence that if a vaccine meets this type of approval, it gives me a lot of confidence in it for sure. I mean, I think we're talking about some of the best scientists in the world, some of the brightest minds in the world coming together to get this vaccine completed and out there and approved as quickly as possible. And I know there's some skepticism about how quickly the vaccine has come out and how quickly it's been approved. But I think, honestly, I'm not an expert, and I'm not going to try to preach to you something I don't know that much about. But I will say that, I think this is a very serious situation, and I think there was a lot of bureaucratic red tape removed, and there's been over a decade of research put into SARS COVID vaccines. And I think there was a lot of building blocks to go off, a lot of years and years and years of research to go off of, and a lot of really hardworking people that got together to make this vaccine a possibility. And I think we're all very fortunate, all of us who do live in the United States and who are able to have easy access to these vaccines. I think it's something that we're very fortunate of. And I think you should seriously consider, if you haven't done so already, taking advantage of that, because there are still a lot of places in the world right now that don't have that same opportunity. But we also do, guys, here have a quote from Dr. Peter Marks, who's the director of the FDA Center of Biologics Evaluation and Research. There's a statement here. He says, we evaluated scientific data and information included in hundreds of thousands of pages, and they conducted their own safety and effectiveness analysis and performed a detailed assessment of the manufacturing facilities. So that's kind of just a little bit more detail into touching up on what I already said. A little bit of a conversation piece here, like we already kind of talked about. Experts think a full approval might help ease the concerns of some people who were vaccine hesitant. And that's a hope of mine as well. I know there's always going to be skeptics and people pushing and feeding misinformation out there. And this is not going to put those people's minds at ease, unfortunately. But I hope that it does put some people's minds at ease, where we can get a good amount of people vaccinated and acceptant of, you know, the science, which I think is really important. And so Ken here talking about, I believe his roommate saying he has lung damage, and I don't know if I had any lasting effects, but I'm having other health issues I just found out today. Well, I'm really sorry to hear that, Ken, and I hope that you and your roommate are able to get the treatment that you need, and that you ultimately feel better. But yeah, that is really unfortunate. I'm really sorry to hear that. And I appreciate you, sharing that, with everyone, here today, when you didn't have to. So I think that's honestly like just courageous of you to put that out there and say, hey, you know what, like this is something that's serious. And, it's affected me personally. And, I think there's a lot of people, we've all had people close to us that it has affected, very personally. So yeah, guys, I just wanted to kind of have a little bit of an open conversation, share my thoughts and opinions on the approval of the Pfizer vaccine from the FDA. I think it's a great thing. I think it's a really great thing. And I hope it leads to the world just being a little bit of a safer place. So with all that being said, guys, I think it's time to tone down the seriousness of it, although there is some seriousness to this special segment, of course. But let's bring up the positivity, and we're going to jump into our special segment for this week, which is Scientist Spotlight. And we are going to give spotlight to here. Let me here pull up a photo I got here. We're going to give the spotlight to Vera Rubin. And Vera Rubin, there's a new biography out on the career of Vera Rubin called Bright Galaxies, Dark Matter, and Beyond. And it tells Vera Rubin's story of how she helped prove the existence of dark matter. Vera Rubin's research forced cosmologists to radically reimagine the cosmos. So guys, in the 1960s and 70s, Rubin's observations of stars whirling around within galaxies revealed the gravitational tug of invisible dark matter. So I think some of you have maybe heard the term dark matter before. I know me personally, I used to watch a lot of documentaries on the Science Channel and the History Channel. And dark matter was always this cool, mysterious thing that you can't really see, but we know that it exists. Well, as it turns out, we know that it exists a lot of because of Vera Rubin's contributions. So although astronomers had detected hints at this, enigmatic substance for decades, Rubin's data helped finally convince a skeptical scientific community that dark matter does exist. And that journey was rife with obstacles. When Rubin was a young astronomer in the 1950s and 60s, many observatories were closed to women, and more established scientists often brushed her off. Much of her early work was met with intense skepticism, but that only made Rubin, who passed away, unfortunately, at the age of 88 in 2016, I don't know how to pronounce this word, but I'll just say a much more detailed data collector, which ultimately I think contributed a lot to how well her research was presented, which ultimately I think gave her the credibility that she definitely deserved much, much sooner. But I just thought this was a great article that I found in Science News, this biography, I believe, written by a Science News contributor, or here we go, a Science News associate news editor. And I thought this was just a great way. It's like, wow, this new biography came out. And it's something that I think it shows advocacy for women in science. And I think that is something that is really important to to have role models and encourage people of all walks in life, but in this specific case, young women to get interested in science, because you can change the way that science is viewed, science is seen, literally help prove the existence of dark matter in ways that scientists were unable to do for decades. I think that's groundbreaking. I think that is impressive. And once again, guys, the book is called Bright Galaxies, Dark Matter and Beyond. And you can get it at bookshop.org if you're interested in learning more about the incredible work on dark matter from one Vera Rubin, who is the scientist of this week's show for our special segment of Scientist Spotlight. So with all that being said, guys, that just about wraps up the show for this week. I hope I did okay going solo this time around. I had a lot of fun talking science with you guys. I know we spent a lot of time on that first topic, but let's be honest, that was a fun topic. That was an interesting topic. We got a little bit serious. We learned about an incredible scientist and her contributions to the study of dark matter. All in all, I think it was a pretty good day. So thank you so much for joining us. Ryan saying I did great. Thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate that. I do feel a little nervous. I'm a little sweaty. I'm going to be honest with you guys, but I think we powered through it. I think we had a good time, and I'm so excited to have had this time learning great new things about science with all of you, and hopefully spending a little bit of positive information, a little bit of useful information with the people, the good people on the internet in this small little corner of the internet, which I think is one heck of a great community. So this was a lot of fun. I'm like trying to figure out how to close out this show, because normally I have guests to throw to. I'm like, plug stuff away, guys, plug stuff away. But hey, it's just me. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. If you're watching me on screen right now, you've already found me at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/BrandonHanna. Please hit that subscribe button and that little notification bell so you don't miss a thing. If you want to, well, keep learning more things about science with me, because that's what I'm here to do. And of course, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I am trying to move this show in particular. It'll stay in video on YouTube for sure, but also move it over to podcast form. If you are someone who enjoys audio only listening, definitely check out the periodic table on Spotify. I'm doing my best to get these episodes up as quickly as possible, get up to date, and then it's just going to be smooth sailing from there, guys. I'm going to make sure these episodes get out the same night they're on video, right on audio, but it's going to take me a little bit, so bear with me. It is a lot of work. RB3 once did this for the Schmoes Know show. I don't know how he did it. God bless him. That must have taken weeks. So yeah, guys, with all that being said, it was great to have you all here today. And as always, thank you for taking time out of your